I'm Jamie Seeker, and this is What It Takes. Each episode, I sit down with real business owners to talk about their journey, the wins, the challenges, and everything in between. Let's dive in. Hello, and welcome back to What It Takes. I'm your host, Jamie Seeker, and today I am so thrilled to have someone who truly understands how the arts can shape lives and build futures. Our guest is Dr. Michael Remsen, President and CEO of Keynote, home of the San Diego Youth Symphony, located right in the heart of historic Balboa Park in San Diego, California, my hometown and old stomping grounds. Michael's career is such an inspiring blend. He's an accomplished composer, author, educator, and a powerhouse nonprofit leader who has dedicated his life to making music education accessible to thousands of young people. He's led teams of over 80 staff and faculty, overseen major arts initiatives in both Houston and San Diego, and even served as composer in residence with the Ulster Orchestra in Northern Ireland. Today, we'll dive into how he's keeping the music alive for future generations and what it takes to lead in the arts and nonprofit world. Michael, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here, Jamie. Thank you so much for having me. It's a real honor.
Oh, I told you when we first got on, I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. My background is in, you know, musical theater and the arts, and it's just kind of ingrained in my soul, and especially being in San Diego. So can you just take us back to the very beginning? What drew you into music, and how did it shape the person that you are today?
Right. So, I mean, I grew up like you. I grew up also in musical theater, actually. And so I grew up in New York City. So, I mean, that's, you don't get much closer to it than that. And my father was a musician as well. He had been a musician when he was a kid, and he actually sang in the Metropolitan Opera Chorus when he was growing up. And then he made sort of a left turn and studied psychology and went to the University of Chicago. But the arts were super important to him. And so when he got married and started having kids, he wanted to make sure that his kids had lots of opportunities. And so much of the reason that I do what I do is because of the opportunities I had when I was a kid. But I started piano when I was 5 years old, and then had wonderful opportunities in schools and out of schools. And I studied voice in college. Well, I studied theater, went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, and then I was pursuing a path in theater, and then really realized that music had really been the true love and the true thread all along. And so I switched gears and did a degree in vocal performance as an undergrad, and then really got into composing. I'd always been writing music, but I never really knew, like, oh, you can study this composing thing. And so then I switched gears and did graduate work in composition. And all through that, I'd had opportunities to teach in there as well, and really fell in love with the idea of teaching and saw what the power of teaching was to really share knowledge and really empower people through knowledge. And so that's kind of where it all, you know, sort of started.
Well, and that's kind of, that leads into my next question, because I was really curious to see you go from, you made a major shift from composer to nonprofit leader. And so was that part of what inspired that journey?
I think they really, in a lot of ways, they really grew together. And I think that, you know, it is the very, very lucky and very, very talented person who is able to have a career that is only devoted to, like, to composing, right? And really, on some levels, you have to go over into the commercial world, I think, to really have to, you know, to, you know, cull out a career as a composer. And most composers have kind of that extra thing that they're doing often, which is teaching on some levels. And often that goes into university life. And nothing against university life, it just wasn't really for me in a lot of ways. And so I started working in the nonprofit realm while I was still a grad student. And I started volunteering with nonprofits and then working for nonprofits. And while I was still in Houston and I was doing my doctorate, I got hired in to a brand new nonprofit in 1996 that was called AFA. And it was a summer program. It was a summer intensive. And I got hired in as a part-time teaching artist to teach music theory and to help out in the composition department. And it was brand new that first summer, 45 kids. And it was a 5-week program. And I really saw, it was high schoolers, and I saw the power of what happened when you brought kids together, put them in an intensive situation like this, and treated them with respect, treated them almost like equals, and said, we're gonna give you a professional experience and treat you like young adults and ask you to reach heights that you didn't think you could do for yourself. And I watched a group of kids really rise to the occasion and say, we're here. We love the way we love the way you're treating us. We're going to respond in kind. And they did more than they ever thought that they could. And I just said, man, this is the coolest thing ever. And so I stayed with AFA for years and years, and I eventually joined the year-round staff. They invited me to join the year-round staff, and I eventually became the executive director when my dear, dear friend who was the director at the time retired from the program. And my team and I built it out, and we added year-round programs, and it just kept building and growing and growing. And it became the largest nonprofit music education organization in Houston, because there were you just looked around and there were just so many kids who were ready to experience that kind of thing. Just to say, yes, we're here and we want to be enriched by the arts. We want to be challenged. We want more. And I assembled a team of people who were just there who said, yeah, we want to give it. We want to share it. And it was a very exciting time, and we could just dream up amazingly cool programs and do it. And that little summer program with 45 kids that first year grew into K through 12 programming, orchestra, band, composition, piano, jazz, choir. We took over the Performing Arts High School in the summer, and we had 500 kids by the time we were done.
Wow, that is amazing.
Very cool program, and still exists today. I'm so proud. It's still going strong. You know, the team that I worked with, many of them are still there, and it's still an amazing, amazing program. So if you're in Houston and you love music and you're looking for something to do with your summer, go find AFA, because it's an amazing experience.
Absolutely. And I want to kind of shift gears, because it's kind of shaping up here. I had some questions about your mission at Keynote, and it's really all about cradle to college music education. And just from what all of you've been saying, it's kind of becoming clear why that it is that way. Why is starting so early critical?
Yeah. So the shift to San Diego is a really interesting kind of shift away. And it's like, I came out here to San Diego 6-7 years ago. And San Diego Youth Symphony is a very different kind of program, right? It's just a youth orchestra program. So our focus is much more narrow. And they had begun doing some work in the early childhood realm, but it was really, really new. And I had actually, when I was still in Houston, one of the programs that we had there, this is relevant, I promise. One of the programs that we had, our composition department there that I had run for many years, had this amazing collaboration with Houston Ballet Academy. And we would pair up young composers and young choreographers in the summertime for a 5-week collaboration where they would together create a short ballet. They would create the music, choreography, costumes, lighting, the whole works. And in 5 weeks, we'd get it up on stage, record the music, and there it would be. And this was an amazing program. And so as part of that, I ended up teaching at Houston Ballet Academy for 11 years. And and I taught a program there on helping ballet dancers understand music more intuitively. But the thing I noticed at Houston Ballet Academy was that they started their kids really young, like 3 years old, and they had kids in creative tumbling. And those kids were staying in the program for years and years and years. And I said, why can't music do this? Like, why? And I'd never seen a music program that did that, that started them young and kept them going. And so it just got me thinking, and we actually tried to do some of that at AFA. Around the time in the year or two before I left and came to San Diego, we were kind of digging down and adding programs for younger and younger kids, kind of working our way down. When I got to San Diego, they had just sort of jumped down and said, hey, let's start a program for littles, ages 0 to 5, like a kind of mommy and me style program, which we've since built out. And then they were working their way up to kind of fill in the gap. So they just did it slightly differently. And so they started. And so my team and I brought in some wonderful people who are early childhood experts, and we built out that program into a program called Chimes, which is for 0 to 5, which is for children and their caregivers in the classroom together so that they are building a real love of music making at home. And music is an integral part of developing speech and language skills, fine and gross motor skills, and school readiness, right? And also like the pro-social skills, like so things that we all value in children, we're both parents, right? So turn-taking, sharing, like all those things that you know, you want to see kids do and get them ready for school. And then the bridge program between Chimes, which uses music very much as a tool for all that other stuff. And then for 5 to 7 year olds, which is more about really intentional use of music for music literacy. So this is really developing musical skills now before you add an instrument into the equation. It's called Music Discovery. And that's our bridge program from Chimes to the Youth Symphony. And so by the time they're finishing up the Music Discovery program, they are at the cusp of what instrument am I going to play? They've tried everything, but they're at the point of saying, okay, they're going to select the instrument that then they will play in San Diego Youth Symphony. So and it just, you know, there are so many great reasons to start early. It builds that love of music from the very, very beginning. It adds, there are so many other sort of benefits that I've already alluded to, just, you know, the school readiness, the speech and language development, the pro-social skills, there's all those wonderful things, but it's really just building that love of it from the very early years. There's lots of other benefits later, you know, things, you choose the right instrument, there could be college scholarships, there's all sorts of things, you know, depending on, you know, choices. But it also allows us to educate the parents from a very early age. You know, parents want the best for their kids, as we all know, and it's a great way to start conversations with parents at a young age, you know, with their children to strategically use music in their lives and in creative, fun, and ways that are good for their kids.
Yeah, that's amazing. But I was just kind of thinking as you were talking about all of this stuff, my mind is very operational and it's very much thinking about the business. And so all these programs don't just happen, right? Like there's so much to do behind the scenes, managing over 80 faculty and staff. It's no small task. What's been your approach to building a strong, but also like a mission-driven team?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the beauty is so when I got here, Keynote didn't exist, right? So we had the San Diego Youth Symphony program. We had, you know, the early childhood program was beginning, and we also had our community programs, the Opus Project, and which takes music out into the schools to build the value proposition to make sure that we have music education programs in our schools. And what I noticed was that we were missing that kind of central point, right? That there was a lot of siloing in the organization and people didn't feel that connection to each other. There was, and so it was hard for everybody to come together around a kind of a central rallying cry. And I thought we all need to feel a central mission, a central focal point of what we are. And the community also needs to understand us as a central, like what is the broader mission of this organization? And to understand how we as a nonprofit, what's the model for partnering with the community as a whole, whether that's with individual families or whether that's with schools and community centers, because it was a little diffuse when I got here because there were a lot of ambitions, there were a lot of good ideas on the table, but it wasn't all wrapped into kind of a tidy package in the way people could understand. So that led us to something of a rebranding, if you will. And it was but it was also really a restating of our purpose. And that's what led us to Keynote, which was to express our identity in a new way. And Keynote is really about the cradle to college model, right? So if you have Chimes leading to Music Discovery, leading to the Youth Symphony, that's how families, individual families, can progress through our programs. That's so if you start in a Chimes class when your child is 6 weeks old, and we have them as young as 6 weeks, you know, you could be in one of our programs until you're 18, basically. So you could stay with us for 18 years in theory. We have families now who've been with us. I mean, I have kids who are graduating from us this year who've been with us for 10 years because they've been in the Youth Symphony since they were seven. They're 17 now. And so adding a few more years isn't that far. It's not that far-fetched, right? And we already have families who have you know, the music discovery pilot just finished last year, and we already have families who have gone from Chimes through music discovery and who are, our first pilot group is in the Youth Symphony this year. So, and we're watching those kids like hawks, as you might imagine. And so, it's working, right? So the families are, they love that this pathway is there, the cradle to college pathway. They're following it because we've laid it out for them. They're saying, this is great. Like, we can do this. So for families, they're getting it. And the same trajectory is there from a community perspective, because we can, the secondary idea around cradle to college is adaptability, scalability, replicability. And these programs have to be able to flex and go into schools, go into community centers, go and be offered where they're needed, because we're not doing our job as an arts organization in modern times if we're just sitting in Balboa Park waiting for people to come to us. It's, Balboa Park is centrally located. There's lots of good things about it, but there's lots of families who can't get to us, and who it's, and so we need to get to them. We need to seek them out and go into schools and school districts that are underserved. You know, you grew up in California. I did not. But the legacy of Prop 13 for your listeners, like Proposition 13 back in the late 1980s, did a wonderful thing for property owners in California in that it limited property taxes. But in low to moderate income communities, it decimated arts programs and even sports programs in our schools, because all that property tax money got taken away from schools and school districts. And so the focus then became on purely just reading, writing, and arithmetic, because that's all there was the money to do. And so one of our big partners, the Chula Vista Elementary School District, which is in South Bay, it's the largest school district in California, 50 elementary schools. And when they became a partner of ours 15 years ago, there had been no arts of any kind in that school district in 25 years. And so, because of Prop 13. And so there's a lot of need out there. Everybody thinks California is so progressive, and of course it would have the greatest schools and arts programs, you know, in the nation. Not the case. There's a lot of need. And so for us as an arts organization, the mandate, in my opinion, is for us to get out there into the schools. And so our programs have to flex to offer the same thing. So Chimes goes out, and we're in the preschools and Chimes to bring music into those schools. We're at places like the Monarch School, which is the school for unhoused families, because those families need us more than ever to make sure that those kids are getting exposure to the arts. And then our Youth Symphony program has a model called the Opus Project, which goes into schools to build the value proposition for music education. And we make sure that the arts aren't a privilege, and the arts aren't like, you know, only for the privileged. Like, the arts are right. The arts are core, and because they have to be.
Absolutely. And you can't administer any of these programs without your instructors and educators. So when it comes to hiring artists and the educators that you put into schools and bring into the communities, or even, you know, if they're at home at Balboa Park, what qualities do you look for just beyond like their technical skills?
So obviously they have to have training, the musical mm-hmm. training. We can provide teacher training, you know, to help them. And I have a stable of wonderful teachers who then can teach new teachers to provide the training in the schools. It helps if they've had education training as part of their background as teachers in schools. And then there's just the genuine love of teaching kids. You know, teaching is a skill. And not everybody is cut out to be a teacher. Just because you're a good musician doesn't make you a great teacher. I've seen okay musicians who are amazing teachers, and I've seen great musicians who are not such good teachers. And so it is a true skill, and it is a true passion to come to teaching. And so we have to make sure that we screen for it to make sure that people really love teaching, whether that's for our littles or all the way up through, you know, teaching middle schoolers and higher. I personally feel like I definitely have certain ages that I am great with teaching, and I have other ages that I am not so good at with teaching. And I think the best teachers know where their skills are at and know where they're not at. And you know, try not to put themselves in situations where they're not, where they're teaching age groups that they're not good with. Like I am not good with middle schoolers.
That's a gift. That is a special gift.
It is a very special gift because you're more than just a teacher. You're a coach.
Absolutely.
You're a parent. You know, you have to be a little of all of it with middle schoolers. And it's just, it's not my calling. I'm great with high schoolers, love me. Little kids love me. But like middle schoolers, I'm just not good.
It's tough. Yep.
But I will say that that's probably one of our biggest challenges is finding enough wonderful teaching artists here. And it's one of the challenges of San Diego is that we're, you know, one of the nation's most expensive housing markets to live in. And San Diego is also not a big gig town. And so it is very difficult to make a living here as a freelance musician. There are not a lot of independent gigs. Many of our theater and dance companies don't hire freelance musicians. And the ones that do, those gigs are pretty spoken for. There's even not a lot of our schools don't have like after school teachers. They don't bring independent teachers in. A lot of our churches don't have live musicians. And so there's just not a robust freelance music scene here. And so it's just very difficult. And so many people come down from LA. And so it's just very difficult to make a living here as a freelancer. And combine that with the, you know, insanely expensive rents. And it's very, very hard. It's just very hard to make a living here. And so we just don't have a lot of folks here. And so that's something that my colleagues and I talk about regularly. And we've been trying to come up with some innovative models even to see like, could we, you know, band together and maybe create like full-time jobs with benefits between us that we could create, and then maybe, you know, that you work 15 hours for me and you work 10 hours for somebody else and 15 hours for somebody else. And between us, somehow we hobble together your benefits. And that way we can lure, you know, maybe some grad students, you know, who are finishing up at Coburn or at some of the other, you know, at Rice in Houston or one of the other, you know, conservatories. Because when I was in Houston, Houston's a great gig town. There's tons of gigs and you have very strong college programs at like a program like Rice where there's just all these amazing young musicians cycling through. So I used to have my pick of really great grad students coming out of there who were really eager to work in fun and different programs like our AFA program there, because we weren't just a private lesson space. Like I teachers going out into the schools and coaching chamber music and doing very different stuff. So a lot of those Rice grad students and U of H grad students were really interested in coming to work for us. So here it's not the same.
Yeah. And I think that's a challenge that a lot of business owners face, or, you know, leaders face when they've got a need. They've got only a small pool of candidates that can fill some of these roles that they have. And so that's definitely a really creative way to try to attract people. And I see that happen all the time. And so that kind of brings me to our last question. It's our signature question I ask all of our guests. And that's, in your opinion, what does it take to be successful in business? Because that's, at the end of the day, you are running a business. You're clearly serving the community and doing a lot of things, but your product is really, you know, making a huge difference. On the back end, though, it's still a lot of the same thing. So what does that take to lead that helm?
I think, you know, especially in the nonprofit sector, you know, I think there's that added, you know, yes, it's still a business and you have to, you know, sometimes you have to make hard choices and make those business choices, even though there's all this passion behind it, right? Like I work with a collection of very passionate people, and it's one of the things that I love intensely about my job is that we are a collection of very passionate people, but it's also one of the biggest challenges about the job is that the passion is there, and sometimes passion and business run into each other, and that's hard. And so leveraging that is definitely something it takes to be successful in this area. I think also just, you know, being able to talk the talk and walk the walk. And I think for me in this context, as being a music educator, being a former teaching artist in a program, you know, I could walk in here and I could talk, you know, talk to the staff and say, I've been in your shoes. I've done exactly what you've done. And I think that that helped me so much with connecting with my staff in so many ways. And the teaching artists who are out there on the front lines, I think it helps build trust that I'm not just an administrator who's been, you know, put into a job and is kind of running a business. You know, I think that they see me as a peer because they know that I've studied what they've studied. I've been out there doing it. And I think then connecting authentically with our families and with our stakeholders. I'm a parent, I'm a grandparent, and so to be able to authentically talk to our families and to empower, not just for me to do it, but to empower everybody in our organization to authentically talk to our families, because our families are why we're here and our kids are why we're here. And you know, and so this is customer service, right? Like, I mean, I hate connecting it to something so like businessy, right?
But it is
exactly what it is. It is customer service. And I talk to my, you know, my teaching artists or the folks who are helping, you know, we've got a team that helps set up the chairs and stands at rehearsals and things like that. And I'm always like, don't forget to talk to our families, to ask them how their days are going, to just, you know, say good on you once in a while, whatever it is, because these are the most important people. Unless, you know, they're the whole reason we're here. So just, you know, remember to say hi, remember to ask how people's days are going, because we don't have jobs. We don't have a purpose. It's not even just not having a job. We just literally don't have a purpose unless these folks are coming and spending their time with us. And so I think that it's that reminder all the time. It's just kind of keeping that focus. And I've been in this field for 30 years, and I say to myself, and I remind people all the time, it's always about the kids. And I've always said that the day I get out of it is the day I forget that the kids come first. And that's, you know, and so whatever your business is, you know, there has to be that same thing. Whatever it is that comes first, if you've got to keep that, you know, that's the mantra, right? And
yeah.
And for us, it's the kids.
Yeah, keeping the main thing, the main thing. Well, I think those are three great points. The takeaways that I'm getting from what you're saying is just being able to make the tough decisions, balancing, you know, your mission and where you're trying to go with, you know, it is a business and you do have to sometimes make some of those tough decisions, and being in that seat, you've got to be the one to do that. The second one is walking the walk. You know, you can't ask somebody to go someplace that you've never been. There's a lot more weight that comes along with being a leader who has walked in their shoes and connecting that way. And that third piece of relationships. I mean, it's all relational. Everything that we do, even if we're selling, you know, an item, right? Like you're in retail or you're providing a service or you're working in nonprofit. It all comes down to the people that we're serving, the people who are buying our products, the people who are buying into what we're selling or what we're teaching. You know, I think that those are three really, really great takeaways. And it does take some of those very key things to be successful. So, Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure hearing your story. I may have taken some liberties and gone a little longer today just because I'm so like into it. And like your passion for the arts, your leadership, your commitment to young people, it really shines through in everything that you're saying and like all the stories and stuff. So thank you again for sharing your journey with us.
Okay, my pleasure.
Listeners, if you want to learn more about Michael's work and Keynote's incredible programs that he's highlighted, where can they find you?
So our website, keynote-music.org, is always a great place to start. Or you can just Google San Diego Youth Symphony and you will absolutely find us with no problem. It's our 80th anniversary right now. So 80 years serving the greater San Diego community. And so there's lots going on to celebrate our 80th season. Come on down, join us for a concert. Right on that website is our concert calendar is always being updated. So, and there's, you know, between the youth orchestra, the jazz program, there's always something going on. Come see an early childhood class. You know, there's always something happening.
Wow. Thank you so much. Congratulations. And what a huge, huge milestone. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to another episode of What It Takes. And we'll see you next time.
This podcast is brought to you by Seeker Solution. Are you a business owner feeling overwhelmed? We can help. Head over to seekersolution.com to schedule a call today. Would you or someone you know like to be featured on this podcast? Our applications are now open. Apply today at seekersolution.com and click on the podcast link to get started.